Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who knows that Mo Christmas is not just a frame of mind. It was a minor league player in the 1990s. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and Maurice Christmas pitched from 1992 to 1997 in the Atlanta Braves system. He went by Mo. Mo Christmas. Mo Problems. Wow.
Mo Christmas. Mo Problems? I don't know. That's for you to decide. We are pre-recording this episode, this special Christmas edition. Doesn't really have anything to do with Christmas, but we wanted to make sure we released a show today, even though we, even as Jews, we are celebrating Christmas. At least I am with my wife's family. And so we wanted to get some content up here for you fine listeners, whether you're celebrating Christmas or not. And we are going to do that in the form of a Hall of Fame special.
You know, there are people out there celebrating Christmas who maybe you hate your families and you don't want to be with them and you want to listen to our podcast. And then for all the members of the tribe out there, okay, like instead of Chinese food, listen to the pod.
Yeah, or do both. That's also totally fine.
And then for those of you who believe in no religion, the only religion to believe in is the Hall of Fame. Am I right?
The Church of Cooperstown. And that is what we will be talking about today. This is an episode, I believe last year for our Hall of Fame discussion, we did it much closer to the reveal in January. So this year, we don't have as much data in terms of the direction of the ballot. I know it's only been a few weeks that, you know, the great Ryan Thibodeau has been tracking the Baseball Hall of Fame ballot as he has for many years now. But what we're going to do is we're just going to go through it. The first half of the show is we're going to talk about a wave of newcomers to the ballot that, I mean, let's just be honest, Jake. I mean, this is the ultimate sign of getting old. Is it's like, oh yeah, like I remember these guys most of their careers, and now they're on the Hall of Fame ballot. This is a new experience for us. So these are players that actually mean real things to us in the way that they didn't necessarily when we first started talking about the Hall of Fame somewhat professionally 10 years ago.
How was I supposed to get riled up one way or the other about Jack Morris when he was done playing by the time I entered this earthly plane? Like, yeah. I can't. Whereas for Jose Bautista,
I have thoughts.
I have many thoughts and feelings
and many things. So anyway, so that's what we're going to do here. The first half, we'll be looking at the newcomers. Second half, we'll be reviewing who is still on the ballot and who has a good chance at election. And then in the end, we will indeed be presenting our ballots, as well as one more thing that I haven't shared with Jake yet. Oh, we love those things. But Jake, let's begin.
Well, I want to begin.
Get into the names. Yeah, we should kind of set the stage.
Yeah, before we get into the names, let's talk about our respective Hall of Fame ideologies.
Sure.
The way we think about the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Only one of us wrote a substantial college paper on the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And it was not me. I like how you and I, like, you wrote on the Hall of Fame and I wrote about political Islamism and the Tunisian Revolution. Mm-hmm. So I guess tomorrow we'll do a pod on that.
Yeah. But yes, I did indeed write my senior thesis on baseball in the Hall of Fame. And a lot of it was specifically like steroids and how it's talked about. That was essentially the premise, is basically just diving into just doing essentially a rhetorical analysis of like, what are the ways that people talk about steroids in the Hall of Fame in a positive way and in a negative way. And a lot of it was about, you know, a character clause and what the part of the voting that instructs voters to consider people's character and all these other things. Something that at the time, you know, I kept it focused on steroids, but it's obviously become a part of the conversation beyond that, right? I mean, this is, and that some people that disagree strongly with that, and I think that some people rightfully are like, yeah, no, like, I don't want to celebrate people that are bad people. We're not going to dive too far into that stuff, but it is a real part of this conversation. It'll come up with some of the players we discuss. But at the time, you know, I was just focused on the old PEDs, because I think that inspired enough discussion on its own. Now, at the time, I was super interested in it. Of course, we still had Bonds and all those guys on the ballot. That's changed. We've had some of those guys have moved on. Now we have some different PED cases that I wasn't looking as closely at, like Manny and A-Rod. So that part of the discussion's kind of moved on. I'm excited that now most of this can just be about the baseball players and the careers that they had. And I'm excited for most of these players that we're going to talk about, that is going to be the focus. But admittedly, it sometimes evolves and devolves into a lot more than that.
My approach to this is a battle between good and chaos, because what I want to do is I want to vote for Jose Bautista and Bartolo Colon and James Shields. I want to do that. I feel that deep within me. However, now that we are members of the Baseball Writers Association of America, and in 9 years from now, Jordan, we're going to have the opportunity to vote for this shit. I don't know if we will.
Well, we're jumping ahead. This is what I wanted to discuss later, but
we will.
It's a good thing to start with. It's true.
And that means I feel an obligation to be legitimate and not irresponsible with my points. Because when we see a goofy ballot online, we laugh at that. And I don't want to be laughed at. I've been laughed at enough in my life.
You
I'm laughed,
be laughed
at
with.
Yeah. Well, I'm laughed at 3 days a week on this year's show. And I don't need that to spread to the public space. So anyway, like Mark Burley, like I really do think there are arguments for him to be in the Hall of Fame. I can't really think I can vote for him.
Yeah.
We'll get to all of that. But in my mind, Kevin Goldstein, okay, who now works for the Minnesota Twins and co-hosted a podcast called the Up and In Podcast for Baseball Prospectus, which was the show that really sucked Jordan and I into this universe. Kevin's approach to the Hall of Fame was the Hall of Fame, and that if you were notable and famous enough in a positive way, then he would vote for you. So like he would have voted for like Bo Jackson, right? And so like there, I don't agree with that, but there are aspects of that thought process that I do agree with. And sure, that is more in like my general man-ness to Bobby Abreu is where that manifests more than like I'm voting for Jose Bautista because he hit one big home run one time.
Yeah, I think that, right, that gets into the did it feel like I was watching a Hall of Famer, something that we can now feel like we can comment on with some of these players, you know, and increasingly so as we get older and players who the bulk of their careers. Now, admittedly, you know, some of the players, some of the new, you know, the newcomers that we're going to talk about, we clearly remember watching them, but maybe not necessarily through the intense analytical lens that we do with players that will be entering the ballot in 5 years, right? I mean, obviously we're going to talk about Joe Mauer, we're going to talk about Beltre and Utley, who, and David Wright, like these are incredible players who we very much remember playing, but in some cases they're peak, like we were still in high school, right? Or we were still even younger than that, right? In Beltre's case. So it's a little bit different, but I do think that we have a little bit more of a clear-eyed understanding of who these players are than in the past when we would talk about it.
And all these players can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Jordan, which person on the Hall of Fame ballot is most likely to ever send us an email?
Oh, man. That's a good question. Not if we're expanding and I'm trying to open it to even ones, probably Billy Wagner, maybe? As someone
Billy
that
Wagner,
you've interviewed before?
I was going to say, yeah. Billy Wagner is the only person on this list whose phone number I have. So yeah, that gives him a nice leg up. However, don't forget we've interviewed Alex Rodriguez as well.
That's true. I'm going to throw Jimmy Rollins in there as an option, as someone who's like on TV in like the baseball talking space.
Yeah.
That I could imagine there's a sequence of events where like we get to meet Jimmy Rollins and we hit it off and it's like, oh yeah, like I'll, you know, let's get Jimmy Rollins on the podcast in, you know, 2027, you know, oh, let's set it up. Okay. I'll send you an email. I'll send it to my email, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Like that, there's a, but other than that, it's probably a shorter list.
That being said, one of these people, Jose Bautista, definitely follows us on Twitter. And Twitter.
Actually, is that true? I haven't checked on the Joey Bats.
We're going to get to that.
We'll get there. Okay. So again, the way we're going to do this, we're going to first have a show. We're talking about the first timers. And we are basically going to organize them between, at least we'll go from guys we do not expect to be on the ballot next year. Now, remember the other basic rules of induction here. You can be on the ballot for 10 years. It must be 5 years since your last major league season before you get on the ballot. You need 75% of the vote to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And you need 5% of the vote to stay on the ballot the following year. And so every year, there's usually between 25 and 30 names on the ballot. And every year, about 10 of them will get zero votes, you know, and they get on there. You have to have played at least 10 years and then fulfill some sort of, it's kind of unclear the exact requirements to get on the ballot. I know there's a committee that does that. But a lot of times we have a bunch of names that will not be on the ballot next year. And so this is our opportunity to acknowledge them and be like, that's a hell of a career, but we are not going to talk about you in a Hall of Fame context ever again. And so we're going to kind of start with those guys and then work our way up to the ones who we think certainly will stay on the ballot and then have a chance for election either this year or in the future.
No better place to start then than Brandon Phillips making his first appearance on the ballot. Phillips played 17 years in the major leagues, 11 of them for the Cincinnati Reds. He was drafted by the Montreal Expos back in 1999 and was included in that wild trade to Cleveland for alongside Cliff Lee and Grady Sizemore that really allowed Cleveland's run of contention from like 2005 to 2008, even though he was in Cincinnati by that point. Jordan, Brandon Phillips' career war. Give me a guess. We're going to take turns on this.
I'm going to guess. I know. I feel like the D war was pretty bad, even though he was quite acrobatic. He delivered a lot of highlights. He was in the category of player that would deliver highlights, but wasn't actually a good defender. To my knowledge, I don't think he like won any gold gloves. I'm going to say 24 war for Brandon Phillips.
So I'm going to keep track of this and we can see who's more points off.
Okay. Okay.
Also, if you don't know what war is and you're listening to this, I feel like you do. I don't know if I have
to explain. We are going by baseball war. Reference for, I assume.
Yeah. Yeah. Baseball reference, wins above replacement, the total value, wins provided over the course of a season. Jordan, good guess. The correct answer is 28.4.
Okay.
You just said 24 so flat.
Say it again.
You said 24?
24, yes.
28.4.
28, okay. Now, here's the one thing I want to say about Brandon Phillips, which I just remembered and I'm so glad. Because while Brandon Phillips, he was in Cincinnati a long time, fan favorite, whatever, just really fun, interesting player to watch. I recalled that a few years ago, Brandon Phillips continued playing well beyond his major league career in independent ball. Okay, he went to Lexington Legends, and I remember a headline that made me laugh more than any headline that I've ever seen, which I have just sent you in the chat, my dear friend, and I would like you to read me the headline of the link I just sent you, because it is highly relevant to the discussion that we're having. Read me this headline. Read me this press release from the Lexington Legends on May 31st, 2021.
Lexington Legends signed future MLB Hall of Famer Brandon Phillips.
So, while we are quick to discount his chances, perhaps they are onto something. Perhaps they are looking at his 200 homers and 200 steals, and he did have multiple gold gloves, four gold gloves. What was I talking about?
Come on now.
I guess his issue was he didn't really draw any walks. And that kind of sunk his overall batting line.
Quote, having a future Hall of Famer on the field, in the clubhouse, and part of the ownership group is great for our entire community and the game of baseball, said Legends president Andy Shea. Future Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's amazing. Now, again, his issue, forgive me for completely misrepresenting his defensive reputation.
Yeah.
But again, 95 career OPS plus, a lot of that was when he was putting up numbers. It was in Cincinnati. And when you park adjusted for that park at that time, it was like the highest OPS plus he had in any single season was 118. That's usually not going to get you in the mix, even though his counting stats were pretty good. Brandon Phillips, future Hall of Famer, according to the Lexington Legends, but not according to us. Let's move on to Mr. James Shields. James Shields, whose name will ring out in the city of San Diego forever for multiple reasons, but also compiled one hell of a major league career as a starter, big game James himself. This man pitched a whole bunch of innings. He was as durable as it comes for a really, really long stretch of time. Now he, you know, bounced around a bunch of teams. He was one of the best pitchers on the Rays when they were really coming up and establishing themselves. You know, only made one All-Star team, and that was that one year in 2011 was a spectacular season, third in the Cy Young. But when you think of James Shields, we've had some experience with James Shields. One of our favorite pieces of content we ever did was with James Shields. But what do you think about him as a career? Because I don't think he's going to the Hall of Fame.
He's more than the guy who was traded for Fernando Tatis Jr. The big game James moniker that was thrust upon him early was kind of unfortunate, because from that point forward, he was pretty bad in big games. And so then every time he was underwhelming in a big game, which again, kind of small sample size, everyone online would be like, small game James, right? And that doesn't seem... He was one of the coolest cats we ever interacted with, I think, in Major League Baseball. The epitome of chill. Mm-hmm. Elite chill on Mr. Game James.
And he was, I guess there was one injury in his second to last year, but just remarkably durable. I mean, 33 starts in essentially 12 of 13 years or 11 of 12 years. And well, the really unfortunate thing was just kind of the timing of him bouncing around is he pitches with the Royals in the World Series in 14, but not 15. So like in my head, I'm like, oh, James Shields was on that. No, he wasn't. And so his postseason, his big game experience, yeah, was a little bit limited. But there's a good amount of black ink on here, right? I mean, he in innings and starts and then also in runs allowed when it wasn't so good. But he was a hell of a – and you mentioned, again, of course, Tatis, traded for Tatis. I mean, duh. Also gives up Bartolo's home run, which, of course, we'll get to when we talk about Bartolo. But that's two things in San Diego baseball history that will live on forever.
I will guess 33.8 career war.
30.7 for James Shields. So,
all right.
Nice work. Again, we are going to alternate here. So that's pretty much right in line with my Brandon Phillips mm-hmm. guess. But that's a good one. But yeah, hey, man, yeah, we played Fungo Golf with him. I guess if you search Fungo Golf James Shields on Google, I don't think too many other results will come up.
I hope not. We're stealing so our thunder.
You could check that out from a few years ago. Let's move on to Victor Martinez, Jake. Victor Martinez, this guy was, I would say, when you talk about the cliche of he, you know, takes a 0-2 pitch and lines it up the middle because he's not trying to do too much, and then the broadcast says, that guy's a professional hitter. Mm-hmm. That's Victor Martinez. And I know he was also a catcher. I know he was a switch hitter. I know he was, you know, alongside Miggy, really made those Tigers lineups in a lot of ways what they were beyond Miggy, because it was like, holy shit, Miguel Cabrera is one of the greatest players I've ever seen. And we have to deal with Victor Martinez. I remember that feeling a lot watching him, even late in his career. He was a hell of a player.
16 seasons, the first chunk with Cleveland, 2 years in the middle with Boston, and then an impressive run, 7 seasons with the Tigers at the end, for whom he caught just 31 games over 7 years. At that point, he was almost exclusively swinging the stick. He was no longer squatting. Just a great hitter. Like, yeah. Career 118 OPS plus is really impressive. 2014 was a season worth remembering. This was Mike Trout, I believe his first MVP. Martinez finished in second. Mm-hmm. And Trout deserved to win it. No ifs, ands, or buts. But Martinez slashed .335 batting average, .409 OBP, .565 slug. That's a .974 OPS. A .974 OPS with only 32 homers is very impressive. Mm-hmm. Hitting .335 is pretty nuts.
Yeah.
So he could really rake, man. A couple fun things about him. So once hit into 4 double plays in a single game.
Really? That I assume tied for a major league record?
Yep. 3 ground outs and 1 line out.
Ooh. So it was just meant to be for unfortunately. Yeah. The BABIP gods were not especially smiling on Victor that day. I'm sure some of those were hit pretty hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And then he was traded from Cleveland to Boston 1 day before his bobblehead day in Cleveland. And so they didn't really have a choice, so they just kind of gave it out, even though he wasn't there anymore. That's and I think good. The moral of that story is don't schedule a bobblehead day around the trade deadline. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That's just like rookie. I mean, I don't know. I can't remember his exact contract situation, but I mean, come on. That feels like an avoidable situation. I'm going to guess, that's a lot of DHing. So like as good as the offensive numbers are, there's no way it can be that high. But I'll still go with like 30. It almost seems high. I'll go 36 for Victor Martinez. He hit well for a long time. 36 WAR is my guess.
32 is his correct amount.
I was a little aggressive there. But yeah, man, I mean, in terms of just modern switch hitters, I mean, he is one hell of a player. And I guess maybe if he caught for longer, you know, maybe he would be revered a little bit more. But that is a ridiculous stretch. And how good he still was, you know, in that age 37 season, even in 2016, he was just a fantastic, fantastic hitter. All right, let's move on from Victor Martinez to Jose Reyes. This is unfortunately the first one where some off the field stuff, most notably a domestic violence suspension at the very, very late end of his career, certainly kind of tarnished, I think, a lot of what was in the early part of his career, a very beloved player in New York City and with the Mets. And of course, alongside David Wright, who we're going to, you know, talk about here in a little bit in a much more positive light. But as far as his on the field production, I mean, Jose Reyes to me was someone who, when I think of, I mean, I guess we'll talk about this with Jimmy Rollins later too, but in terms of speed and in terms of like actual on field, like I am stealing a ridiculous number of bases. And like in the early baseball video games I was playing, it's like, oh yeah, Jose Reyes is the guy. If you want to steal bases, you have Jose Reyes. And as a hitter, like I don't have as much of a recollection of like what his peaks were in terms of OPS plus, like pulling it up now. Like I don't remember, like I'm seeing now, like what do you think his career high in home runs was in a single season?
13.
Yeah, 19, right, in 2006 when he's, you know, he's like on, you know, down ballot MVP ballots and whatnot. But three straight years, almost four straight years with 60 steals is really what I'm remembering. You know, led the league three straight seasons. And yeah, he was a very unique player in that sense.
Do you remember the end of 2011 when he was, I believe, like a point ahead of Ryan Braun for the batting yes. title on the final day of the year? Yes. And he like bunted for a single in his first at bat, then asked the manager to pull him so he could keep his batting average up. And then he ended up winning it because Braun went 0-for-4.
Yeah, which is like such bull. It's like a bullshit move. However, I have a little bit more like patience for when you're hitting 337 versus if you're doing it hitting 305.
So what made it even more of like a story at the time, not that we remember, because it was 2011, but it was the 70th anniversary of Ted Williams entering the final day of the season, which was hilariously a doubleheader, with his a batting average at 400. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he opted to play in both games of the doubleheader on the final day of the year.
Right.
And with his batting average at 400. And because he was Ted fucking Williams, he went 6-for-8 and pushed his batting average to 406. Yeah. And then Jose Reyes was like, I'm good. I'm all right.
The other thing, right, at 337, right? It's like, dude, come on. You can win it fair and square. But yeah, I mean, you know, that's his batting title. And before I let you guess the war, like the other thing when I think of like certainly second half of Jose Reyes' career is just like the 1 year in Miami, which like that Miami team that was assembled quickly and then hastily disassembled is one of the stranger ones we've had in the 21st century. That 2012 Marlins team. Then he goes, you know, Toronto and Colorado.
Yeah.
And somehow it's unbelievable that he managed to play then three more seasons with the Mets at the end. That is just ridiculous. It was not good really at all at that point. But all right, Jake, guess the war.
Well,
Jose Reyes.
I think I don't want to just blast past this. The off the field stuff, 15-16 offseason, domestic violence. I believe he was not charged. The charges were dismissed because, quote, his wife refused to cooperate as a witness. And there are a million reasons why that could be the case and should not. Just because innocent in the eyes of the law does not mean innocent in the eyes of the world and innocent in the eyes of Major League Baseball, who suspended right. Reyes, I believe, for 51 games.
Yeah, it was like, I think, the rest of that season. And again, like we've talked about this in other cases before, but ultimately, while if you want to lean, instead of pointing so heavily at the law in a lot of cases, like, you kind of got to trust the investigation and to some degree the punishment levied out warranted, you know, serious consideration. So that is something, of course, that he's going to, but it's also not one where this is not a career that we're going to be talking about in a Hall of Fame context beyond this year anyway.
Right. And it's the type of thing where it's like, fun player, feel icky celebrating him. Let's guess the war. So I would imagine that the defense was probably a little bit worse than you'd think, but he was really stealing a lot of bags there early on in the career. But I think like after 30, he was not anything significant. So I'm going to guess 39 career war.
37.4. Nice job. Yeah. I mean, peaked around six in that 2006 season. And so, yeah, it wasn't that way, but you're right. I mean, yeah, once he got into his 30s, there was not a lot going on for Jose Reyes. Let's move on to another Jose, a much more lovable Jose, and that is Jose Bautista. Jose Bautista when we talk about players, again, who really mean something to us, not that we're necessarily Blue Jays fan, but someone who gave us so many memorable moments, and his peak kind of peaking with us, you know, really big starting Cespedes Family Barbecue is as Jose Bautista is running shit in the American League. This dude who had bounced between like five different teams before he was 26, 27, 28, and then bam, here he comes, dominating baseball with the bat. He was sensational and, of course, has several iconic moments, some, you know, involving home runs, some involving brawls, some involving just, I mean, Joey Bats was Joey Bats. It was you know, to say it was kind of like a shooting star situation is not like, no. This dude had a 5-year peak that was about as good as you could possibly get. And I like when you look at, you know, some of the war metrics that say, and I don't have it up now because I know I'm going to guess, but when you look at like the seven best seasons of a Hall of Fame candidates, just by war, that gives you a good sense of how good. And if you put Bautista's seven best seasons, he is Hall of Fame worthy. It's just that he didn't really do anything before age 29, and then it fell off pretty hard in the back half of his 30s. But man, that peak was good.
Born in the Dominican Republic, drafted out of junior college in Florida, Chipola, which is one of the biggest and best junior college programs
still
in the country. So he's taken by the Pirates, taken by the Pirates, ends up on the Orioles, Rays, Royals, ends up back on the Pirates. And for the first like five seasons of his big league career, he's a mediocre utility third baseman. The epitome of a replacement level player, honestly, is what he is. He has 1,634 plate appearances with an 89 OPS plus.
That's three full seasons plus of just
being fine.
No one was going to know who this guy was. He was replacement. He was just there. He was a major league player, nothing more.
And then he started leg kicking. He started he elevating like the baseball
a little bit. He basically just like found a slightly different timing mechanism and added the leg kick. And with the Blue Jays, it all comes together. And that vision of that swing and just kind of that silhouette of the leg going up and then the just exploding through the zone and the finish that he had, we saw. I mean, what, he had a 50 homer season. We watched this dude just crank 200 plus home runs over a very short period of time, and he was the guy. He was that dude.
He was something else. And then, of course, the bat flip in the 2015 playoffs is, in my opinion, the single best moment of the 21st century in baseball. It is my favorite moment. The energy of it, the entertainment value of it, I think it becomes a opening salvo for the culture shift in the sport that was to come after it, I think.
That part I agree with for sure.
Joy, celebration, emotion was it, right? And I think Bautista, it's my favorite. I love it. I understand there are arguments for other plays, whatever. I love this moment so much. It earns Bautista. Jordan, do you know there's a species of weevil named after Jose Bautista?
I didn't know that, actually. I feel bad that I wasn't prepared in so, that case. But
I believe a Canadian researcher found this weevil. He was a big Blue Jays fan, and the weevil was from the Dominican Republic. Hmm. And so he's like, well, it's a Dominican weevil, and I'm from Canada, and I love the Blue Jays, and Jose Bautista is the man. So it's like called like Weevilless Bautista Psy or whatever the fuck.
And he, you know, he's, you know, gotten to represent also Dominican Republic in international competition, even later, much later in his career, well beyond his peak. But when we're guessing the war here, I don't really, again, I know how much it was those 7 seasons, defensive value limited. Like, did he get to 40? I think so. He must have gotten to 40. I'll say 45 for Joe. Oh, that seems high, but I'll stick with it. Joey Bats, 45.
36.7.
Damn. So how much of that is in 7 seasons? Like 34 of it? Like, I feel like if you looked at, like, that's, I mean.
So from 2010 to 2015, he produced 35 career wins.
Okay. So it's so literally those seasons.
The entirety of his value, more or less, was during that 5-year peak, because he was putting up some negative numbers at other points.
It got pretty ugly at the end. And I guess before too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this guy's amazing. Does he still follow us on Twitter?
Yes. So that's the other thing. Joey Bats, again, well, it's probably not him, although at the same time, who cares? It's verified, so it might as well be him, right? Million followers still, which is a lot for a baseball player. 821,000 following. Which seems to be the strategy for whoever is following him, which makes sense. This is only early baseball Twitter. Like, this was a thing. You would be an account with 3 followers, and then one of them was Joey Bats. Joey Bats 19 has no qualms, you know, sauce in the follow. Now this account has remained mostly just like ads and whatnot and him checking in, but he's still out there. And I don't know how anybody uses a Twitter account that follows that many people, but it's still really funny.
Awesome. I love Joey Bats. Let's move on to Adrian Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm. Adrian Gonzalez, I would say, again, when we talk about the last few years, we've talked a lot about kind of the Padres and how irrelevant they were for so long. But Adrian Gonzalez was the thing that they had. And it wasn't that long. It was from 06 to, you know, to 2010. But it was like, oh, but they got that guy. Like, that guy's one of the best hitters in baseball. And then I remember when he goes to Boston and you think, oh, my God, that was one of the great cases of get him out of this park and put him in this park and let him cook. And cook he did, led the league in hits immediately with 213 hits for, like, again, 213 hits for anybody is ridiculous, let alone for a first baseman who's also hitting for power, hits .338, you know, finishes, you know, 7th in the MVP. And I just remember how perfectly it went, at least initially. And then, you know, he goes to the Dodgers and he kind of descends into a much more very, very good hitter, not necessarily a super duper star. And then it kind of ended abruptly. But a fantastic career. I don't have too much to add to Adrian Gonzalez, but just, yeah, I mean, he was one of the best first basemen of his generation.
Number one overall pick in the 2000 draft, which
from
is
San Diego.
From San Diego. And significant, Jordan. I mean, he's drafted by the Marlins, but significant because he was an amateur first baseman. Like, we have not seen an amateur first baseman go number one overall since then. Am I correct?
No. I mean, we've had some in the first round, but it is not a common thing. And for him to be on the Marlins and then get traded a couple times and then end up on the Padres, his hometown team, to kind of be that was really special. But that's how special the bat was from a very, very young age. And again, like, you look at, you know, you look at the top of that first round. I mean, it's a pretty damn good pick. That's I know he didn't end up doing it with the Marlins, but you look at the other guys. I mean, besides Chase Utley and Adam Wainwright, who we'll talk about later, no one else really with substantial major league careers in that first round. So clearly he was exactly what he was supposed to be from a very young age. And he deserves ample credit for that. Five-time All-Star, four-time Gold Glove, two-time Silver Slugger. But Jake, what is Adrian Gonzalez's career WAR?
42.5.
A lot of these are in the same range, and we know if it was higher, I mean, the hint that if it was higher is we would be talking about them more seriously. So we know not to guess in the 50s or 60s, but nice work. 43.5. Very, very, very close.
Thanks, right, Jordan. I appreciate that.
Two more on the they aren't going to be Hall of Famers. I know we're going long here, but I'm having a good time.
Me too.
Matt Holliday. Matt Holliday, who is now very much back in relevance because both of his sons, he actually might have a third one, but
because his genes go hard.
Yeah. Jackson Holliday, number one prospect in baseball. Ethan Holliday, possible number one pick in the 2025 draft. But Matt Holliday was an absolute baller himself. And when I think Matt Holliday, I think forearms first and foremost. And I think about a guy who his face is bleeding. That's another thing I think about. What do you think about with Matt Holliday?
Legend in two cities. Legitimate franchise icon in two different places, which is relatively rare, both in Colorado and in St. Louis. His run in Colorado, Coors helped, but 2007 when he finished second in the MVP, slashing 340, 407, 607. That's a 1012 OPS with 50 doubles and 36 home runs and led the league with 216 hits. That's just an amazing Coors season. I absolutely love it. That year in 2007 was also when the Rockies made the run to the World Series. You had him scoring or not scoring on the play at the plate, which people forget. He hit a triple to tie the game just before that.
Yeah, and you know Matt Holliday, especially earlier in his career, you know, later we think of him as just like this absurdly jacked, you know, a little bit less stationary player. But yeah, I mean, this dude could move earlier in his career in Colorado. And yeah, he stole 28
bases in 2008.
Yeah, impossible to fathom when he becomes just kind of the stiff, bulked up corner outfielder that he was in St. Louis, but so, he was one hell of an athlete.
Matt Holliday, to me, is a great piece of evidence that you can look like you took steroids without having taken steroids. Mm-hmm. Like if your body is built a certain way and you love the gym, like you can get jacked. Naturally, baby.
You can just lift, bro. It's not that
just
complicated.
Lift, bro.
But yeah, wow. I mean, those core seasons are sensational. And for him to have a 132 career OPS plus
nuts
is absurd for someone to be in Colorado that long, because that it's hard to stand out amongst your league when your ballpark is as friendly as it was. But as you mentioned, you know, to be, you know, there's a few examples of this, but to be beloved in two very clear places is an achievement, I would say. To be that good for long enough in two different places to have that, you know, makes him really special, even if he's not a Hall of Famer.
Not a Hall of Famer, but maybe his kids will be. Let's have you guess.
I'll go with 40 on the dot for Mr. Holliday. The real question is, would you take over under Jackson plus Ethan WAR for 40? If we could combine them together, but 40 is my guess for their father.
Matt finished with 44.5, so you're off by 4.5. Let's move on to a similarly jacked individual, Bartolo Colon. Mm. Bartolo Colon is 100 things at the same time.
Yeah. That's definitely one way to put it. When you have a career as long as you do, when you are still finding places to pitch, when you are deep into your 40s, approaching your 50s, when you have become lovable for reasons that are both obvious and kind of weird, and also you have a, you know, your name's Bartolo Colon and you hit one home run one time. Like there's so many things. It's really hard to even wrap your mind around it. But the point that I would say is like, I think that the younger generation, because he's stuck around and become so popular and has his late career has established him as just like one of these weird online faces of baseball, that like at MLB loves to reference whenever they can. This dude won a Cy Young in 2005. Like, I don't even know if that is even one of the first things you mention about Bartolo Colon anymore.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let me say this, though. Most people on the planet have more families than Cy Youngs. And usually it's one family and no Cy Youngs. Bartolo is a different case. He's two families and one Cy Young.
I mean, based on the reporting of this, when this came out in like 2016, at least two. I mean, it seems like then. So in that sense, you know, this is that, and this is the category of off the field stuff that is both like concerning.
I don't know what to do with it.
Not our business, right? Like this isn't like, it seems like there were some child support issues for kids that were not the ones that his wife thought that he had, all these things. Messy. It's messy stuff, right? You know, if there's not crimes involved, I'm going to say that is not my problem, even if it's a bad look. But it's part of the story because with Bartolo, there's always another thing to be like, wait, that happened? Wait, he was suspended for PEDs and nobody gave a shit? And then he came back and pitched for like 10 more seasons and there was no trouble whatsoever. Like, there's all these different things that just happened above his career. You're just like, how is this guy still being kind of promoted as this like face of the league? And it's like, because he's big and funny. It's kind of that simple.
Bartolo being chubby was the best thing that ever happened to him at the end of his career. And we should, I mean, I don't want to do that now, unpack the layers of why we thought he was so funny just because he was a little gordito on the mound, right? Now, he was also, like, the fact that he had a home run, I'll never forget where I was when that happened. Just an all-time millennial baseball moment. The flip to first that behind his back, the no-look
flip. Oh, yeah. Well, but here's the other thing about the home run. Like, yeah, like when you play it in slow motion and you look at him because he's kind of funny looking, like that's what makes it. But also he was like historically horrible as a hitter, right? Even for a pitcher, the notion that this guy could hit the ball out of the infield, let alone over the fence, was impossible to fathom. And so when he does it at age 43, your mind is blown and it is a singular moment that we've had in, you know, the 21st century in baseball. But it is still the fact that this guy also pitched for what, 10 different teams, 11 different teams in the majors, none longer than the six he began Cleveland with, right? It's a ridiculous career, over 3,000 innings, over 550 starts, you know, pitching. I didn't even, like, I remember that he finished with the Rangers and it was like, oh my God, he's still going. 146 innings for the 2018 Rangers is laughable. And so that on and of itself, there's just so many different things. And because of that, you know, the war compilation is pretty substantial here, even if the peak wasn't as great as we might think.
Does he get any war for pitching in Dubai?
I don't know. I don't think so. But he probably should. I mean, he worked for that, man. That's a long flight.
I'll say 52.5.
That would have been a much better guess if he didn't hang on and pitch with the Braves, Twins, and Rangers at the end. 48.2. But that negative 2.1 in 2017.
Negative 2.1?
Yeah. Negative 2.1 in 2017. I mean, yeah, he had a 6.48 ERA. Like, that was the thing about the Rangers season. It was like, how are we bringing this guy back again? How is this happening? And so that there's so many levels. And here's the thing, man, he ain't going anywhere. Like, this dude's going to just keep showing up. At MLB is going to keep tweeting about him whenever they have the opportunity, for better or for worse. So that is Bartolo Colon, who, by the way, we should note, has already received one Hall of Fame vote within the first, you know, 20 or so public ones that have been released. So don't expect him to get to 5%, but maybe I will be surprised. All right, Jake, those are the guys that aren't making the Hall of Fame. That's a lot of words for people that aren't going to make the Hall of Fame. Let's talk about some guys that might.
Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll chat about David Wright, Chase Utley, and a couple other folks.
Hey, everyone. Producer Chris here with a brand new housekeeping note about our merch. Basically, we have a bunch of new stuff. So if you've been looking for a Baseball Barbacast themed beanie or bucket hat, or even a t-shirt with one of those cool pockets on the chest, well, you can stop looking and start buying because they're all available right now, just in time for winter. Just go to podswag.com/baseball and don't leave yourself clothesless this winter. That's podswag.com/baseball.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Minster and Schusterman. Let's talk about people who could be in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. There are four players on the ballot, first-timers, who we think have something resembling a chance. And we will begin with David Wright.
David Wright is, I would say, when I think of... It's funny, because growing up in D.C., like, we had Ryan Zimmerman. But I remember always thinking, like, him... It was like, oh, Ryan Zimmerman, but he's no David Wright, you know, up there with the bets. I mean, that's the real gold standard here for this, the face of the franchise here in this division. Like, oh, if only Ryan Zimmerman wishes he could be as good as David Wright. And while it ended up actually being a little bit closer than you might assume, David Wright was beloved for a lot of reasons. For him to be also a power speed guy, to be a stellar defender, to be one of the best hitters in the league. And then it just, his body said no mas. And it's one of the kind of the sadder kind of ends to his career. And the, I just remember just the reporting about like the amount of pain he was in towards the end to still keep going. That's what cut it short. And that's what made his Hall of Fame case challenging at the very least. But man, was it a hell of a run. He was everything they could have possibly hoped for him to be.
I really love longevity when it comes to Hall of Fame stuff. I think that's super important. I think being relevant in the memories of different generations of fans is an example of why a player should be enshrined in Cooperstown. And David Wright doesn't really have that. And that's a bummer. Now, that's not his fault. His body fell apart. But we also have to judge him based upon what he did. I think he's very interesting to compare to Chase Utley, who we're going to talk about in a second, because Utley has the last couple years of being mediocre. Wright's peak was longer and not as good as Utley's. And I don't know if that's more deserving or less deserving. And they I would say their importance to their respective franchises equal out, right?
I made, you know, the comparison, and there are a couple others like this, but it's stark when you see someone with one franchise the whole time who's beloved but didn't do anything after 30 and not think about Felix, right? And, you know, Felix Hernandez will be on the ballot at some point in the next few years, and he will be a different case. And you could certainly argue his peak for his craft was higher than Wright's was as a position player. But in terms of, you know, one place, one team, and then it just all went to shit. Now, I would say that in Felix's case, you could maybe blame him a little bit more than you can in Wright's case for it kind of falling off a cliff. But it's still ultimately when you're judging the end of the career and the final results and the final tally of what they accomplished, in that sense, there are definitely some similarities. I think Felix has a better chance of getting in than David Wright. But it just sucks because ultimately... There were definitely times when you watch David Wright and you're like, yeah, that's a future Hall of Famer. But ultimately, longevity is usually what gets you there.
He was never the best player in baseball at any point. Now, that's not enough of a bar. Like, but Felix was the best pitcher in the world at points in his career. Wright was never that. He maybe you could say he was the best third baseman in baseball. But that's
he was certainly, and yeah, was he a top 10 guy? I mean, he finished fourth in MVP. I think what stands out to me kind of looking back is that 2013 season, the fact that his highest, and it was in a slightly smaller sample size, the fact that his highest OPS plus came in age 30 before it all started crashing down.
Oh, he wasn't cooked from like, like he was still seeing the baseball. His body just could not move correctly anymore.
Yep. And that is certainly tragic. But yeah, you know, 50 career war, we're not going to guess anymore, but right at 50, which really puts him in the conversation, but it is going to be, you know, challenging, I think. I mean, so far he's gotten a couple votes. I can imagine him sticking on the ballot, but it's going to be a pretty long climb.
Let's just, before we go, his final game. We were there.
Wow. Oh my gosh. We were there. I completely forgot about that. Yeah, 2018. He played two games? I have no recollection of him playing two games.
I believe he came in as like a pinch runner or a, like there was some sort of other. I don't think he actually. I guess he did. He hit in two different games. Yeah.
Yeah. So did we go to the first game or the second
game? We went to the second game. So he pinch hit and had one plate appearance on September 28th and then started on September 29th. We were at the September 29th game, which is the game where he walked in his first plate appearance, I believe, and then in the final plate appearance of his career, popped out to Peter O'Brien in foul territory, and Peter O'Brien was booed for not dropping the pop-up.
Right. Man, yeah, I remember this. That's
you remember who we went with?
I don't. So now I feel like an asshole.
Shouts out to friend of the program, Scott Rogowski.
Oh, we did go with Scott Rogowski, who, and of course, that meant way more to him than it did to me, right? So the fact that we were at David Wright Day, that's true. But I will always remember Pete O'Brien getting booed just absolutely mercilessly. So David Wright, we salute you. I know he means a lot to a lot of Mets fans, still a very popular character in Mets world. But now let's talk about someone that's a little bit less popular in Mets world. And that is Chase Utley. Chase Utley. Okay, so Chase Utley was, again, we David Wright, like he has the send-off, very sad. Okay, that's the end. This dude played in the 2017 World Series. This dude played in 2018. I have fresh memories of Chase Utley still being a character in the baseball universe. We certainly know for one reason that involved sliding into one Ruben Tejada. But let's start at the beginning, because the reason we're talking about him here on the Hall of Fame ballot in this part of the conversation is that the dude was an absolute baller with the Philadelphia Phillies. He was one of the best defensive second basemen in the league by far, and then also just an OBP machine and an absolute pain in the ass to pitch to, because he was leading the league in hit by pitches basically every single season, and the dude absolutely raked. I mean, we're looking at, you know, 70 extra base hits for multiple seasons in a row. He's driving in runs. He could steal bases. Just an extremely well-rounded ball player who was just an absolute pain in the ass to play against.
Outrageous peak from age 26 to age 31, 54 wins above replacement. And for a player who debuted, he didn't have a full season until he was 26, right? Mm-hmm. That he got to where he did from a WAR perspective. His career WAR was 64.5. Very impressive for Chase Utley.
I mean, he's putting up 2-3.5 D WAR, which is you just do not see, let alone for someone who's also correct, like an all-star level hitter. And that's how you get to a nine WAR right season in 08.
Now, this is an important distinction I think is worth talking about. And it is relevant to Bobby Abreu, another Phillies guy. If you are an awesome OBP dude, I want you on my ball club. You don't stand out in my memory unless you're Juan Soto or Joey Votto. Mm-hmm. And maybe that is a reflection of me not really getting to watch Utley's peak, and I'm willing to have that conversation. And I know there are Phillies fans listening and be like, oh, it's the same kind of thing. Maybe it was, right? But I think there is something about the amazing batting eye that is like less visceral and harder to appreciate than big home run go boom.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. I mean, for him, it wasn't really necessary. It was a combination. He was hitting for a high average. He was walking a good amount, and then he was getting hit by a ton of pitches. And so it was just an extremely well-rounded skill set. Like, it was the kind of guy that, again, was a pain in the ass to play with, but then he was also one of the most talented players on the field. So it wasn't just like, he gets the most out of his average tools. Like, no, he was exceptionally good at hitting for power. Was perfect for the ballpark, of course. And for those Phillies teams, I mean, we'll talk about Jimmy Rollins a little bit later. And of course, you know, Ryan Howard, we had the conversation with him on the ballot last year, I believe, or recently, talking about him as a Hall of Famer. Am I crazy? Didn't we? I feel like we've talked about Ryan Howard on a Hall of Fame ballot at some point, and then he wasn't on it anymore. But Utley was the one you would detest the most as an opposing fan and player. I think that was true at the time, let alone what happens later on with the Dodgers. But he was, I mean, he was the man. He's obviously, he was that dude in Philadelphia for a long time.
My issue is there's not enough longevity for me, and that's probably why I wouldn't vote for him. Yes, the peak was incredible. I mean, 05 to 13, age 26 to 34 was great, but he doesn't have great years before that. He's pretty bad after that. And so the career numbers are not there. I mean, 1,885 hits is not close. 64 career wins is 117 OPS plus is not for me. 259 home runs. He just doesn't clear a couple of barriers. I don't think he is going to get in this year. I think he has a decent chance over the long run, haul. It's a more alluring.
So he's already gotten 12 votes, which means, you know, so far in the early going, like he is absolutely going to be in the mix here moving forward. So it's just because, I mean, the war at 64 war is a lot. And I think if you compare him to, you know, other second basemen, like that's right there. So that's why he's going to kind of hang around. And you could argue that the top level was deserving of it, but for us, it's a little bit a tick below. Now let's get to the two that we feel a little bit better about as future Hall of Famers, Jake, not Brandon Phillips. I would have much more comfort putting these guys in a headline saying future Hall of Famer. And that is Joe Mauer. And that is Adrian Beltre. Let's start with Joe Mauer. I would say that Joe Mauer, it was very clear to me, even though it's not like I was locked in on Twins games during his peak, understanding he was before, I know we had other good hitting catchers, but it was like, holy shit, he's this good of a hitter and he's a catcher. Like the concept of that for me hit and really ingrained itself in my brain with Joe Mauer. And when we talk about just 80 grade hit tool, not just good for a catcher, he was one of the best hitters in baseball as a catcher. And yes, because of the injuries, because of the concussions, he was not catching that deep into his career. But when he was, and when he was, you know, hitting 300 with regularity, that's just not something you see. It's just not something you see. And for his career to go from, I mean, it's essentially a fairy tale, right? The dude is the hometown star. He goes to the Twins, you know, at the top of the draft, and then he has this career. The only part that sucks is he didn't, you know, win a playoff game, right? Or doesn't ever, you know, have much playoff success at all. But beyond that, it was the perfect career. It was a very, in a lot of senses. And I think that while we can get to, you know, Mike Petrel tweeted about this recently, you know, maybe it's not as of an automatic lock of a case as some people are making out to be. I think maybe he doesn't get in this year, but I think that Joe Mauer is beloved for all the right reasons, and I think he is going to get in someday.
I think our expectations for what a catcher is going to change as we move forward. You can look at the career 55.2 war and say that's not enough. And I think that's a little overly simplistic when it comes to a catcher because their careers are simply shorter because it hurts. It's very painful being a catcher. It takes a toll on your body. And like I have this belief that JT Realmuto would be a top 10 hitter in the world if he played left field.
Yeah. I mean, but this is the thing about Mauer. He was a top 10 hitter in the world while he was catching. And we really don't have any catchers. I guess JT's had like stretches. He's had like a couple months stretches where it's like, wow, like he's been one of the best hitters in baseball for over this stretch. But I would say, you know, I think we've talked about the concept of like, if we're just picking our favorite individual season statistically, not to mention, you know, what it actually was like watching him. Like Joe Mauer in 2009 is one that you would pick very early. For to hit 365 with 28 home runs is in only 138 games in a season in which he caught 139 times. That is a season for the ages. It is a season that is so incomprehensible now on so many levels. It is one that will stand out forever. And I think that season will be like I think that season will be a huge reason why he ends up in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how often you could say that about a single season, but I really do think that if that season was just another repeat of the one he had before, even with another batting title, I think it would be different. But that kind of peak, even in one season, is so, 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 so special.
Let's move on to Adrian Beltre, who is as locked as my front door.
I would say actually more locked than your front door. I would say it is more likely that someone could get through your front door than Adrian Beltre.
Yes.
Getting into the Hall of Fame.
My front door was locked from the inside this weekend, and I had to call my super to come break me out.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a you problem. And a piece of context that the listeners didn't know until you shared it. Listen, this is one where it's so funny because we've had some of these recently where it's like, yeah, okay, first ballot, great. And yet he's not going to get 100%, which is funny because that's just how the stupid process works. We've reserved 100% for, I guess, Mariano Rivera, and that's it. But that's the thing. Like, what the hell could you possibly else want from this player? He has everything. He has longevity. He has the peak. He's beloved in multiple places. And also, the number, not just the counting numbers, but, I mean, the fact that he was as good as he was defensively. Again, we talk about balancing of offense and defense. We just saw Scott Rolen get into the Hall of Fame. That dude looks like a freaking double-A player compared. This is disrespectful. But when you compare Scott Rolen, who was known for, you know, both sides of the ball, it wasn't even close to what Adrian Beltre was. And that is really what made it. I think the back-to-back years of Rolen and then Beltre will really make Beltre look even better.
Dude, 93 career wins is crazy. And when we talk about spanning generations, right? I mean, this guy was outstanding. He was a very good player in the year 2000. Okay. Now, he was able to start his career at such a young age that the longevity hits. I mean, 21 seasons. 21 seasons is why he gets to 477 career home runs. That's why he gets to 3,166 hits. But he did do it. And I am a huge believer, as I've said, in having the full run over the course of multiple decades. That 2004 season where he finishes second in the MVP, 48 home runs right behind Bonds, that's great. One of the best defensive third basemans into his 30s, right? We don't have guys maintaining that level of defensive skill that deep as they age. And I think that's what separates him and makes him such a lock as a Hall of Famer. He will go in with a Rangers hat on, I'm sure, which is awesome considering he did not start there until he was 32. We think about guys signing like free agent contracts, right? At the age of 32. And it's like, I guess they're going to go in as that. And they never do. Like they usually, they're not good anymore. He is the example of this working out. He is one of the greatest third basemen in the history of the sport. Very fun, loving player to watch. Remember when he moved the on deck circle and got ejected? We had him and Elvis Andrews tapping his head. And
Felix.
Mm-hmm. And Felix. And then there was, you know, getting to see him hold the World Series trophy that the Rangers won this past October was very, very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, his peak, the 48 homers with the Dodgers in 04, second in the MVP. The bad news is that there was that Barry Bonds guy with a 609 OBP
playing for
the Giants. And even still, Beltre got first place votes in that season. Because his OPS was over 1,000, he was playing third base, it was 9.6 war. So, like, that peak combined with how good he was, how reliable he was, how healthy he was at the end, second most war of any Dominican-born player behind only Albert Pujols, that's a huge fucking deal, and is why he will be in on the first ballot.
Jordan, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we are going to speed run through the rest of this, because we have been talking for too long.
And, again, like, we'll be back in a sec, but, like, if you want to go back and listen to our thoughts on the people we're about to talk about, you can go do that. I'll get the timestamp on last year's podcast where we went a little bit more in depth on the players that have already been on the ballot. But I'd rather spend more time on the guys that are here for the first time. So I'm glad we did that. But let's take that quick break. And when we return, we will review the rest of the ballot who we think has a chance of getting into the Hall of Fame this year.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake, Vince, Jordan, Schusterman. Let's just speed run through some of these. Omar Vizquel, great defense, horrible human being. Go look up some of the immoral and abhorrent things that he has done off the field. We will move on from that. Andy Pettit, he was a Yankee. If he was a Red or a Brewer, he would not be on the ballot still. the numbers are not quite there for me.
Well, yeah, because in that case, he wouldn't have amassed like a full season's worth of postseason innings.
Which
like,
is
Andy Pettit's postseason game log is one of the more staggering parts of baseballreference.com, truly. Yeah. And I we know why, but I would encourage people to check that out. And by the way, these are all players that are still on the ballot. They've sustained, so they've gotten enough support to stay on, but we don't anticipate them getting to a point of induction.
Bobby Abreu, stat heads love him. I would consider myself a stat-oriented guy. I'm just not compelled. I don't get the fizz in my heart. I don't get the fanny flutters, as they say on Love Island, when it comes to Bobby Abreu. And sometimes it's that simple. Simple, like that boy, not nice enough.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more in Team Bobby in this case. Not like passionately so, but he's on the ballot for, I guess this is his fifth year on. Like, I could imagine in a couple of years, if he's still hanging around, like me just waking up one winter and being like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going full Bobby Abreu. But not yet. Who's next?
Jimmy Rollins.
Oh, man. This is another one that I was like mildly surprised he stayed on the ballot, but also pleasantly surprised.
He was not a good hitter. He was not a good enough hitter. He was never a great hitter. 2007, 30 home runs, 20 triples, 38 doubles is an amazing season.
I was going to say, if we're picking individual stat lines, 07 Rollins
amazing.
Is absolutely up there.
MVP.
And MVP. But you're right. Yeah, again, like we said, 95 OPS plus. That is not going to get it done as cool as, you know, nearly 500 steals and 500 doubles and 200 homers is.
Mark Burley, Bulk Lord. I've thought about voting for him. The epitome of 200 innings, but the rest of the career is not there.
Yeah. The thing I've always said about Mark Burley is just put the careers side by side with Jack Morris and then let's have a conversation. I know he didn't pitch one of the greatest games of all time, but he did have a perfect game. So I feel like Mark Burley is not going to get in the Hall of Fame, but it's a sneaky nice case.
Torii Hunter is a worse version of Andrew Jones, who we'll talk about in a second.
I just wanted to say, what would Mark Burley with the pitch clock be like?
Oh my God, don't even. The same. actually, Torii Hunter, like really, really amazing career. 110 OPS plus. I would vote for him over a number of the other guys we've already talked about. One of the most iconic center field defenders of his generation.
Yeah.
MVP votes, gold gloves, all-stars, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, nine-time gold glover. And like, if you know, line up his, I know he wasn't a center fielder for the whole time, but if you look at most of the time spent in center field and just like counting stats, he's like top seven or eight all time. He's got more extra base hits than Joe DiMaggio. Okay. Like this dude did it for a while. So yeah. I mean, again, I wouldn't vote for him, but he did hang on the ballot and I was surprised that he did, but he'll be on for another year.
Oh, I think Torii Hunter deserves to be on the ballot the whole time. Mm-hmm. Now I don't,
he's going to be close.
I don't want to vote for him, but I hope other people do. Okay. So those are the guys who we think are not really even that much of a conversation. Let's get the obvious ones out of the way. PEDs. A-Rod and Manny. If you care about PEDs, then you won't vote for them because they both tested positive after they were not allowed to do the drugs. If you don't give a crap, then you will vote for them because their career numbers are insane. I tend to fall on the latter side. I think all the PEDs are a part of baseball history, even if it was during like the era when, you know, I don't necessarily think it should mean that players don't get to go in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. A-Rod and Manny were both incredible. I want them in my Hall of Fame, so I will vote for them.
Yeah, I mean, they are in the category of they broke rules, which the guys that did it allegedly before them didn't necessarily break rules and get punished for it, right? But that is why you have A-Rod and Manny stuck together in the way that Bonds and Clemens were. These guys are going to get a lot of the same amount of votes, and so far that's only been about between 30 and 40%. They're going to have to take some serious jumps if they have any hope of getting into the Hall of Fame.
Let's talk about relievers. Billy Wagner and K-Rod, Francisco Rodriguez. I made the Billy Wagner argument last year. I think he is the fourth or fifth greatest closer or reliever of all time. Insane amounts of dominance really throughout his entire career. As a 38-year-old in 2010, he had a 1.43 ERA in 69 innings and was like, I want to go be a dad and coach high school baseball. And so he bounced. Love Billy Wagner. He's a shoo-in for me. Francisco Rodriguez is a slightly more difficult conversation, but I am inclined to vote for him because I love relievers.
I mean, we're talking peak. He's one of the best relievers ever. He's one of the best relievers of his generation. Did not have longevity. He did get to 400 saves. And if we are going to vote for relievers, I think he has to be seriously considered. I think K-Rod is a really, really interesting one. And I'm glad to see him stay on the ballot so that we can kind of keep discussing him. Wagner is one of the biggest stories this year. He is in the ninth year on the ballot. So it's not his last chance, but he has 68% support last year. And once you get to that point, it's only a matter of time. The question is, will it happen this year or will it happen next year? So I think I could envision this ending up being a just near miss, and then he'll be a lock in 2025. But he will get there, and it will be glorious for those of us who love Division III baseball. Shouts out Ferrum College.
My favorite story I think I ever wrote was about Billy Wagner. I encourage everyone to go read that. Okay. Let's do this next group. Black Ink, Red Flags, Andrew Jones, Gary Sheffield, Carlos Beltran. I'm putting Sheffield on my ballot. I don't know if I did last year. The offensive numbers are just so overwhelming. The longevity is incredible. He was so fucking bad defensively that it torpedoes some of his WAR numbers. But he had a career 140 OPS plus. And if he hadn't spent practically his entire career in the National League in an era where there was no DH, he would have just been a designated hitter at an earlier age, and it wouldn't be a problem.
I am pretty sure he has the most negative WAR in baseball history at -27.7. But to your point, he's got the steroid suspicions. The other problem with him is, who's standing up for him?
I don't believe he does. There's no steroid suspension.
There's no suspension for a lot of these guys. And suspension are very different.
Well, his suspension is a different story. I recommend reading Jay Jaffe's thing on it over at Fangraphs. Basically, like, he has the most legitimate, they gave me a bottle of goop and I rubbed it on my legs and I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. Because when he was asked about it, Sheffield was like, yes. He's like one of the only players who, like, not in a court was like, yeah, I did that, mm-hmm. You know? And
how he got it, I don't care. And I think that the numbers are overwhelming to the point where I don't care. His other issue is, like, what team is standing up and caping for Gary Sheffield when he didn't spend longer than, you know, 6 years at any, mostly 3 or 4 years at any place. And I actually am curious about that. I don't know how public the Marlins have been and their support for his candidacy. But the most important thing with him is this is his last year on the ballot. And he has reached a level at 55% where a few years ago, it's like, okay, maybe he has a chance. Is he going to jump 20% in this final season? I don't think so. I think he's more likely to end up on a veterans committee ballot at some point. And if he gets the right combination of, you know, voters on that committee, I could see him getting into the Hall of Fame. But as of now, I don't think it's happening this year, even though, I've never been disappointed, you know, reviewing his offensive track record. It is a truly staggering combination of skills.
Carlos Beltran, he is on my ballot. I don't care about the can banging stuff at the end. Just whatever. Important, notable part of history, part of baseball history, part of his legacy, doesn't overwhelm the fact that he was one of the best players of his generation. Now, he does not have an MVP, and I don't know if he was ever the best player in baseball. However, from 1998 to 2017, 20 years, he was a fixture in our sport and was one of the best power speed threats we have ever seen. One of 8 players ever with at least 300 steals and 300 home runs. He has 435 career steals, 312 career home runs.
And one of the best postseason hitters we've ever seen. And I don't think, I actually am totally fine rewarding. I'd rather reward guys who did it than punish guys who didn't, I think. And Beltran is just absurd. Again, in a way with Pettit, but like he did it with 5, 6 different teams. an 1,000 career OPS in the postseason in 256 plate appearances is just ludicrous. That is such a ridiculous amount. Like, this isn't even a commentary on clutch. Like, I don't care. That is an amazing thing that deserves not, like, he doesn't even need that to have a good argument to get into the Hall of Fame. But that does make it a very easy pick for me. Not to mention, he's also one of the best switch hitters of all time. He is, I would say, certainly the last 50 years, it's him and it's Chipper. Tim Raines is in there, Lance Berkman's in there. But that is also something that he has, and I am very strong on Beltran. I totally agree with that.
Andrew Jones, I go back and forth with him. There are off the field issues with Jones. I also don't think that he did it for long enough.
Yeah.
After age 29, he was basically ass for the rest of his career and gained weight and was no longer the same level of athlete in center field that he was before. But holy crap, at his peak, one of the most unbelievable center field defenders ever. 2005, he hit 51 home runs and finished second in the MVP. Mm-hmm. Would you put him on your ballot, Jordan?
I've gone back and forth with him. I know he's, again, like, I usually lean towards the peak as the final the thing that gets me. But I have kind of found myself leaning more in the longevity camp. He's right. He's been a coin flip for me generally. But also, like, there's some guys like him that I don't even, like, remember over the years, since we haven't officially, you know, logged a ballot. And we can give it to here in a second. That I've gone back and forth so many times that I'm not even sure where I landed last year or the year before. So
yeah.
I think right now I'm leaning no, because again, I find myself more tied towards longevity as this goes on. But he's right there. I mean, the peak is pretty undeniable. And also, all three of these guys, you know, over already 46.5% voting. Jones, I think, up to 58% as of last season. So, you know, they're going to have a chance here to get in, although I wouldn't expect any of them getting in this season.
All righty. Todd Helton.
You wrote the great case for Billy Wagner. I wrote one for Todd Helton that was more making just the statistical argument with the basic premise of, yes, he was in cores and the standard should be higher for those in cores. And I believe Todd Helton cleared those with relative ease. And just because he was not a Hall of Famer, because he was in Coors Field, he was a Hall of Famer who happened to play in Coors Field. And I think that what he was able to do for as long as he was in one place, what he means to that franchise is more than overwhelming enough. So if you want to go read our full cases, Billy Wagner and Todd Helton, because Todd Helton's definitely getting in this year. And so we will be talking about him a lot more in January. So I'll kind of save it at that. But if you want to see, you could just Google, you know, Fox Sports, Jordan Schusterman, Todd Helton, and you will see my thoughts on that.
Here are the eight names on my ballot. Two first-timers, Joe Mauer, Adrian Beltre, Todd Helton, Billy Wagner, Francisco Rodriguez, Alex Rodriguez, Manny Ramirez, and Carlos Beltran. That's my ballot. Oh, sorry. And Gary Sheffield.
Yes. Okay. I am going to go. Right. So if we assume a limit of 10, you went with those were
nine.
Your eight?
Nine.
Okay. I think I have the same.
Mauer, Beltre, Helton, Wagner, K-Rod, A-Rod, Manny, Beltran, Sheffield.
I think I'm right there. I think we are in total agreement. You know what, though? Since I got that extra spot, let's get this party started. Bobby Abreu, you have my 10th vote, and we will push that conversation to another year. Jakeman.
What was the last thing you wanted to say about the BBWAA?
Yes. So, as you mentioned, we joined the BBWAA this past season. It was our first full season as members of the Baseball Writers Association of America. And if you are a member in good standing, which we know Jake Mintz is, for 10 seasons.
Dues paying.
For 10 seasons, that means you get a Hall of Fame vote. Which means, Jake Mintz, if we can keep it up, good luck to us.
Who knows?
We will be receiving a Hall of Fame vote after the 2032 season.
Okay.
Now, I bring that up to say, just to start speculating about, let's just get ahead of this here, okay? Even though this is a totally laughable exercise. I did a little, just a mild projection about some players First of all, this is going into the 2033 season the way that we're currently going into the 2024 season. Tatis and Julio will still be under contract, so that's funny. They'll still be chilling. Harper, if Bryce Harper doesn't sign an extension, 2032 will be the last year of his deal. So, but he wouldn't be on the ballot, right? So I had to think about it. Okay, who could be first timers on the ballot with us?
That means they're retiring in what year?
That means that their final season, if I did these calculations right, that their final season would be 2027. Okay. And I came up with just a handful. Again, there's no perfect way to do this for a lot of obvious reasons. Guys hang on at the end and play 1 to 5 games, and then that cooks their clock back an extra year. Here are the names I came up with. There's one that stands out a lot.
Paul Goldschmidt.
Bingo. He is he's the first one that came to mind as someone. Now, his contract situation is unclear. Nolan Arenado is another one where if he does not play beyond his current contract, he would also be one that I believe would be finishing in 2027. Now, it seems unlikely, but again, 2027 is both not that long from now and also a long time for an aging 30-year-old guy in their 30s.
Freddie Freeman?
Freeman, I think I assumed would be playing later than 2027, but that's a fair one. The most fun one that I thought of, or maybe it's not fun, is DeGrom. Okay. Now, do you think DeGrom will pitch like that? You see what I'm trying to measure It's hard to imagine him pitching too late. And I think that's the last year of his contract.
What about Giancarlo?
Giancarlo's one that if the injuries just win, then yes. Giancarlo, I think that is maybe the last year there.
The saddest one is Mike Trout.
I didn't even want to broach that, but yes. And then if Altuve falls off hard just because of his age, maybe conceivably, although I super duper doubt it. So those are the guys that, again, very interesting, we could imagine is on the first ballot. And then the other guys, then it's thinking about who could still be on the ballot. And then we're talking about Joey Votto. I imagine he'll be in by then, but Votto, Longoria, probably not. He'll be in the conversation, guys like that.
So. Kershaw?
But I think Kershaw's another one where he would be in by now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm assuming he's done in the next 2 years. He gets on. He's going to be a Hall of Famer before we're voting. That's my thinking. So there's a couple guys like that where I don't consider it. Miggy, obviously, right? Versions like that. And I hope Votto is too, but we just don't know how much longer he's going. So just something to put in mind. Throw it on your calendar. 2033. Yeah. January 2033, we will be voting, hopefully.
Or
see you there.
We'll be voting or dead.
Those are the only two options. That's it.
Vote or die.
Vote or die, exactly. Thank you all for listening to this lengthy Christmas special Hall of Fame edition. If you want even more Hall of Fame chat, more specifically on some of those other guys, January 19th. We're recording this on December 19th, but January 19th, 2023 was the episode when we went even deeper on some of these players that have already been on the ballot for a few years. So if you want more Hall of Fame chat after all that, that's where you can find it. Otherwise, thank you for listening. Hope you've had a wonderful holidays. We will be back later this week with, I believe, me and Mike Farron, but all kinds of stuff going on. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Isabella Josen for producing this beast of a podcast. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. Let us know your thoughts on the Hall of Fame. Although we probably won't talk about it too much until Adrian Beltre and Todd Helton are inducted. But until maybe Billy Wagner. But until then, thank you all for listening. And we'll talk to you all very soon.
SiriusXM Podcasts.